Well, before we take your phone calls, we're going to check in with Cliff on the Twilight Zone project and what that means. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Cliff, tell us a little bit about this Twilight Zone project. What was that?
George, thank you very much. This is an article which has come out on May 3rd, just this month of this year. And, you know, you have a situation now where for 8 to 9 years, you have a body of thousands of citizens, if not hundreds of thousands, but certainly thousands of citizens, that have been clamoring to have a stop put to the intentional and deliberate pollution of this planet and our atmosphere. You have a body which has continually called for an investigation as to the nature and purpose of these introduced materials, and you have nothing but denial, ridicule, and refusal by anybody purported to be in a position of authority. Now, and what is the basic claim? The basic claim is that our atmosphere is being saturated with particulate matter. That's the most basic claim that's being made.
Right.
All right? All right. On May 3rd of this year, you have an article issued by the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, specifically the Goddard Flight Center. And with your permission, I'd like to read two sentences. I know the problem with reading on the air, but I'd like, if you're able, I'd like to read two sentences from this article.
Okay, please.
As well as give you the title of this article. The title of this article is called Widespread Twilight Zone. Twilight Zone is in quotation marks. Widespread Twilight Zone Detected Around Clouds. Here's the two sentences. Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, documents for the first time that air around clouds that was previously considered clear is actually filled with particles that are neither cloud droplets nor typical dry aerosols, such as dust and air pollution. Worldwide, up to 60% of the atmosphere labeled as cloud-free in satellite observations is actually filled with this twilight zone of in-between particles, according to the study.
Mm-hmm.
This is amazing.
Well, good work. Let's take some calls, too. You ready?
Thank you very much. Sure.
Okay, here we go. For the rest of the hour, we'll take phone calls. First-time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi. My name is Irene. I'm from Dayton, Ohio. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
God bless you both and for covering this topic, and especially you, Clifford. I have a question. I have been sick for nearly 3 years, which I believe might be chemtrail-related. I don't know. I used to live in Arizona where I worked outdoors as a tour guide, and I was being exposed to the chemtrails from 2002 onward. And then Labor Day weekend 2004, I went out hiking in the chemtrails. I thumbed my nose at them and said, I'm not going to let them control my life. I'm very obsessive about them, by the way, unfortunately. And I've been sick ever since with some strange illness, and I'm wondering if you know, Clifford, whether they've actually sprayed an actual virus or something that that gives you an illness that does not go away.
Well, you know, thank you, Irene. We're introducing the health issue here, which we haven't even really spoken of tonight at all. And I guess I would address it in a general sense first for the benefit of the audience, and that is there are huge health issues here. At the very least, you're speaking of mechanically ingesting particulate matter. Forget about what's even in it, just the fact that it exists. If you breathe particles of that size, they will increase the mortality rate. This is not me making this up. This is the American Lung Association. You will have a specific proportional increase in mortality relative to the increase in particulate matter in the air. That's at the mechanical level. Now, if you then venture into this domain of biological components, it gets pretty serious and pretty heavy, and most people don't want to deal with it. I can only report what I know. You know, the specific question, do I know of a virus? No, I do not know of a specific virus by name that is being introduced in an aerosol form. but I have an abundance and wealth of sampling and observations that show the presence of unexplained, unusual biological components in those samples over a repeated period of time. That is enough to justify the answering such as Irene is posing is, okay, what are the specifics now? And where are those questions answered? They are not answered by the citizenry. They are to be answered by public officials that are acting in our interest, that are paid for with our dollars. It is those folks with the reach that have the resources and the means to answer the questions, and these are the folks that need to be put to the task. And it is not for the public to be assuming these duties.
May I ask another question?
Yes, you may.
Clifford, do you know of any medical doctor that actually treats chemtrail-related illnesses? I've gone to so many people. I've tried everything under the sun, naturally speaking. I mean, alternative medicine that I can think of that I've researched, and I'm at a loss. This thing has completely, it's really affected my life in a very, very bad way, financially, in so many ways, and I just don't know where to turn.
At this point, I won't make, a specific reference by name, but I will make mention at this point, I think it may be helpful in a couple of ways, that I have produced a documentary. It's available to the public at cost. If George allows it, I'd give a phone number where that can be acquired.
Sure.
That's at 1-800-335-7226. Harriet Fells there will get a copy of the documentary to you at cost. There is no profit to be made with this documentary. The reason I mentioned this is because you will notice an extended interview with a naturopathic doctor within that documentary, and it may be at least a starting point for you to get some helpful information, if not contact an individual directly.
I understand, Clifford, that asthma is up over the last several years by thousands of percent.
The answer is yes. Let's ask ourselves, why are we hearing on the public airways, supposedly public service announcements, declaring that we have a new and extensive major disease in our presence? And what is that disease called? It's called COPD. Now, we didn't happen to run into COPD 5 years ago because it's basically an artifact of creation combining a multitude of respiratory ailments, including asthma. But COPD exists as the fourth leading cause of death, and we're being told to go to our doctor and get a COPD test and possibly the drugs for it. And do you know what the primary symptom of COPD, which, by the way, stands for a chronic obstructive pulmonary disease?
Asthma.
What's the primary symptom? Shortness of breath.
Yep.
Now, ask yourself, why are we in a state of affairs? Look at your smoking trends. Smoking trends are way, way down. You don't get to use that one. What is your explanation for a general condition affecting the bulk of the population where they are now expected to have a symptom of shortness of breath? Where is that coming from? The American Lung Association is putting out another one. I don't watch television, but I hear them on the radio, and they have a public service going for the National Health Association and American Lung Association, and they have another one out for lung cancer. And it's quite curious. In neither one of these public service announcements do they ever attribute any source to the problem. They simply identify it as a condition. And lung cancer is on the increase, no condition given, and no source for it given. And they even make the point that even though smoking has gone down, we are seeing a dramatic increase in lung cancer. Ask why. What are you breathing?
Next up, west of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning, gentlemen. Hi, George and Clifford.
Hi.
I'll be really quick in my lead-in, and I've got some interesting observations that I think I can share. And I fully agree with Clifford that, you know, the Earth is changing and contrails have a definite effect. And you can see that most obviously in the photographs taken from space that were done right after September 11th, when we had no aircraft other than military aircraft flying over the United States, and you can see a definite change in cloud cover. However, while I really appreciate his zeal and his intensity to want to find out what's going on, and I share with him his frustrations that the government doesn't even is so offhand and brushes people off brusquely in their responses. I'm a journalist and science and military journalist. I wrote the original story for HARP back in Popular Science in 1995, and I also have several thousand hours of being in the air as a air-to-air shooter with combat and high-performance aircraft and helicopters, being everywhere from sea level to 61,000 feet at Mach 2. And that some of the things I think that we see because of the nature of aircraft nowadays and because of the nature of the engines, some of the contrails look very odd. And you will see these donuts on a rope type things. And while I'm a guy who chases after black aircraft, I have seen the donuts on the rope form in the contrails in a 767 or a KC-135 tanker that I was right behind. I have seen, you also have in Clifford's pictures, there are aircraft that have the appearance of a sheet of vapor coming off their wings. And that happens at certain altitudes, at certain pressures, at certain angles of attack. And once in a while, the entire aircraft will be enveloped as it's flying along in this sheet of vapor. There are also particulates, which Clifford very well explained how clouds and contrails, how they form and all that. A lot of older aircraft put out a lot of nitrous oxides and carbon and soot, so they also give stuff for water to form in and around. And some military aircraft watch themselves or whether or not they are forming contrails because it gives you away in the sky. Like if you're a stealth airplane, like the B-2, they have a little LIDAR in the back of the tail of that thing. It's looking for the contrails so they can find a place where they don't make contrails. And the military even went so far as to go to find stuff that would actively reduce contrails. That doesn't say that what he says isn't happening, but I certainly have seen things in the air that would tell me that some of the things that people attribute to chemtrails is not it. And I'll give you one good one here, and then I'll shut up, and you guys can ask me a question if you want. A couple years ago, I'm in a KC-135 aerial tanker. This is the aircraft that the Air Force uses with a boom to refuel other aircraft. I worked with the navigator and went with the cloud cover, and I lived in Juneau at that time, the capital of Alaska. And we happened to notice it was a great big, nice, clear hole there. So I brought the aircraft over the top of Juneau and got all sorts of chemtrail reports. And what it was, we were dragging six of the USF, the Air Force's Thunderbirds behind us, and I had them turn on their smoke generators when we were up at about 30,000 feet. So immediately this one great big aircraft flying with six streaks across the sky, I could certainly understand why people would interpret that as being something very weird. And the other one that I see that in your pictures, Clifford, you have some pictures of Iraq, and they have these racetrack shapes. Those racetrack shapes are the clear patterns of tanker and AWACS and communication aircraft that fly what are called racetracks there.
All right, you want to react to any of that, Cliff?
I appreciate the information that's given. I actually have no contest or disagreement with any of the information that has been provided. Life is full of exceptions, and there are circumstances which can be used to attempt to explain the vast body. I'm talking about a body of evidence, and that's the difference here. I'm not talking about exceptions. Life is full of exceptions, and we can go through those individual exceptions, and we can find certain cases where certain events can occur. They do not, from my perspective, in any way accommodate for the massive body of information and evidence which has been accumulated over many years. As an example, if you will go to the EPA, actually the EPA and the Air Force, they issued a joint statement. They call it a fact statement. And it's supposed to set the record straight for the public as to, you know, what contrails are about. And you have about four interagencies, and they all put out a one-page statement. And you will see a classic statement used, a classic phrase in any of these so-called authoritative statements. And they will say, you know, contrails can persist for long periods of time if the humidity conditions are just right. But you know, not in one of these documents that I've ever seen do they ever state exactly what those conditions are. I've studied those conditions, and I can identify, I think, with a high degree of certainty what those conditions are. And they are the extreme exceptions to the rule, and they do not fit. They do not fit the meteorological database, which I have certainly dug into myself. And in this particular case of, you know, the unusual photographs that have been taken recently demonstrating some very asymmetrical behavior in the formation development of that trail under low humidity conditions, that was not an exotic aircraft by any means, and I'm not going to go into the specific of the tanker or the AWAC and this type of thing, but that was one of many very similar aircraft, which quite often will have the appearance of commercial aircraft. I'm not going to say they are commercial, but they certainly have the appearance. The wing-to-wing phenomenon is not an extreme anomaly. It was a short period in the early phase of the operation where it appeared as though a method was being used, which was subsequently altered upon presentation of numerous photographs. I'm familiar with the theories and ideas that say that this is a vortex condition, this type of thing. I've studied them. All I can say is the exceptions do not fit the massive body of data and evidence which has accumulated.
I got to congratulate you, Cliff, on the work you've done on this subject matter. I mean, extremely well done and thought out.
Thank you very much, George. I appreciate that very much.
We will take another quick call before we take our break, and then we'll come back with final calls. Hi there. You're on the air with us.
Hi, George, and hi, Cliff. I will say, too, thank you for the wonderful explanation. My Uncle Albert told us that those chemtrails were the airplanes emptying out their toilets before they landed. I thought it's good to hear the, you know.
Maybe in the beginning.
reason I wanted to ask is, would a ionizer in the home help with the air, you know, help us to breathe or help with the quality of the air?
Well, that's an interesting question, Cliff.
Yeah, I've actually done quite a bit of work with that, because if you look at my work there, you're going to find several papers related to measurement of ion counts in the atmosphere. That's not a real easy thing to do, and that equipment is not very affordable in most cases. I was able to find my way into finally getting an instrument. But I measured the ion counts and have some absolute values there. And the data shows an extreme imbalance, very unexpected numbers. Very high towards the positive side. Life is not supposed to be full of negative ions or positive. It's a balance of both. That ratio is roughly in the order of 5 to 4, somewhere in there, slightly towards the positive side. The data shows an extreme skew towards the positive side, and I've done some experimentation with electrostatic filters. I would say in general that if you can create an environment that mimics that more balanced ratio, in nature, that I think you will find your environment also to be improved.
So, stay with us, Cliff. We're going to be back with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, it's going to be the Ghost Trilogy, a very special program that you have never heard about, the Ghost Trilogy. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Clifford Carnicom. Clifford, what do you do next? You continue the research? You don't give up, do you?
No, my work does carry on, although at, let's say, a more completed state. In other words, I have done the majority of what I am able to offer as an individual with my resources that I have. This issue doesn't reside with me. This issue resides with the inhabitants of this planet. My role has been primarily as a researcher to offer information and evidence of an intentional and deliberate change in our environment without our consent. So if there is an issue that I think that I can contribute further knowledge to with my resources, and if I have the time available, which is not the same anymore, I will do what I can always. But this issue is not my issue. This is our issue. This is our air.
All right, back to the phones we go. Wildcard Line, you're up with us. Hello there.
Yes, hi, thank you. This is Rick from Miami, and it's an honor to speak with Cliff, the power of intention. Today I was looking up at the sky and saw these chemtrails in the sky, and I remember George mentioning that there was going to be a program on chemtrails, and I was really hoping to get to tell them about Cliff Carnicom and the barium that he's found. And sure enough, Cliff, you're on the program tonight, and I am more than enthusiastic about it, but not about what you bring to the table, of course. My main comment is I'm a college student, and I looked at all the research that he's presented, and I'm wondering what methods we can use to awaken people, because like he said, it's more than just this issue. It's a general sense of people being asleep. And the other thing I wanted to mention is he got me thinking when he mentioned the Manhattan Project about time and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered how the Philadelphia experiment plays in this and the Montauk Project.
Both good questions. Thanks. I'll let you listen on your radio. Of course, the Philadelphia experiment, Cliff, if you're aware of that, had to do with electromagnetic pulses. Very similar to some of the things you've talked about.
I am aware of it just in a general nature, but, you know, I cannot begin because my work is based on observation and data in terms of this role. I mean, I understand and accept many other, let's say, aspects and components to life beyond just observation. But in terms of what I can offer to the public, I can't draw any direct linkage because, you know, the issue itself, the event itself, has its own controversy and its own physical principles and this type of thing. So I'm not saying no, I'm not saying yes, I just don't have any direct linkage. But clearly, I think that we are involved with manifestations of exotic forms of energy. I think that's a fair statement.
And in terms of getting the word out, programs like this, you got to just keep pounding away.
Yeah, that's right. It's difficult. I spent over a year making the documentary, and the documentary was my summary statement in a way that I hope is palatable to the general public, because I know we're very much a media-driven society these days. My website is pretty difficult to wade through because the papers evolved individually, and now we have quite a pile of individual papers. So the documentary is what I've offered as a summary statement for people to introduce themselves to this issue. And, you know, that's one offering that I can make. You'll see within that documentary that I do call upon each of us personally to engage ourselves in the way that is best suited to our talents, skills, and resources. And that's what I've attempted to do.
Very good. Next up, let's go to our west of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi.
Hi, George. This is Ralph from California.
Hi, Ralph.
And how you doing, Cliff?
Hi, Ralph. Thanks very much for listening.
I want to say that I had a relative that works for a big military computer company, contractor in Chandler, Arizona, and he was telling me what they were spraying is the new nanotechnology. It looked like the crystals that you explained, ground up glass it looked like, but what they were trying to do is a way of spraying, and it dealt with, like you said, the brain has given a conductor, a wave of tracing people. He was told this, and then we had an international conference, and they asked him, will that affect our body? And he said, no, it goes in your system for about a day or two, and it comes out. But he had a high clearance, and I've been to the plant there. I've seen stuff, but I didn't even see what he just talked about. This is about 2 years ago in the making. And he's saying that when he worked out there, every time they sprayed, they would get a film on their body when he was doing gardening out there, and he knew they were doing chemtrails. But it is a new technology, he said, that we were spraying. And the way he described it, he explained that to me the same way. I don't know the information about the technology, but he told me about this about 6 months ago. And it's real amazing.
Thank you, Ralph. You know, the information that you're offering is consistent, I would say, in the main with the scenario that I'm presenting from that of basically a researcher. It's certainly consistent with that. You know, nanotechnology is something that we are going to face and accept. It's here. The way I look at nano, you know, it's basically a function of size. There's a new addition to that I'm learning, and that is the element of literally artificial construction of machines, and that's where Dr. Stanage's work is very, very interesting, and people should follow up on that and listen to that, because it expressly is about the introduction of nanotechnology with very unusual filaments. Everything there is consistent with the data, except for the statement about leaving your body in a day. It doesn't seem to fit the evidence that we have. I think we have chronic resident health conditions that now exist, and particularly if you get metals into your system, you know, those things are not going to come out that quickly. And the memory lapse that many people have, respiratory conditions, I believe are an accumulated effect and not something that can be expected to dissipate within such a short time period.
All right, let's go to our next wild card line. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Oh, I'm Nancy from Las Vegas.
Hi, Nancy.
Nevada. And if you guys want to see contrails, boy, you ought to come to the city. They have been going really wild for about the last 3 months. I got a picture phone, you know, a camera phone, and I've got like 50. Oops, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, I have about 50 pictures on my phone, and I almost saw two planes that were doing chemtrails the other day almost collide.
Yeah, it's almost like you can play tic-tac-toe with them.
Yeah, I've got all kinds of pictures. I've been emailing you. I've been fast blasting you.
Yes, I remember that.
And I've got like about 50 pictures that I could, you know, give you.
Well, you don't have to give me 50. Why don't you give me your best 10?
Oh, okay. And then it seems like since I live in Las Vegas, they do it on really clear days.
Yes.
And then it goes from like 9 in the morning to 5 at night. They're up there 8 hours a day.
Is that pretty standard, Clifford?
Oh, I think, you know, the logistics of this operation are one of the most difficult, I think, to figure out. Clearly, it appears to be a very sophisticated and difficult for any kind of immediate pattern to be drawn. I've certainly made mention of the most significant determination I can make in terms of when, and it does appear, from the best I can tell, is that the humidity, those local relative minimums in combination with ion counts also appear to be a significant factor in terms of where they are. But in no way would I even reduce it to that simplistic level, because I think we're doing a very, very sophisticated and complicated logistics on this operation.
First-time caller line, your turn. Hello there. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Renegade. I'm rolling at you, actually, coming into L.A. tonight.
Well, you drive carefully. There's not that much traffic in the wee hours.
Yeah, but most of them are the crazy ones, too.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. I got to thinking, with them using particles that easily ionize and convert to plasma, and given the military's history of addressing threats without worrying about the health factors, do you think that there's a possibility that they could be trying to develop some kind of barrier that might work on advanced technology, similar to the way an EMP works on our current technology?
Oh, I think that's a real possibility here. In other words, military applications usually go both offensive and defensive, and there's really no reason at all to restrict it to one side of that equation. And I think it's fully normal and expected that once you do develop some type of energy source or some weapon source, that you consider that from both a defensive as well as an offensive standpoint. So I think that's a very reasonable conclusion to make.
Okay, thanks, Renegade. Next up, east of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast.
Hi, how are you this morning?
We are well, thanks.
This is Melissa from Niles, Michigan. I had a question. I was in the military out in California, and my ex-husband had worked on the flight line as a mechanic, flight mechanic. And I know that when the planes take off, if they have to do an emergency landing, they have to dump the fuel. What does that do in the atmosphere or just to the public in general? Because they don't tell you when they dump it.
I don't think it contributes as much as some of these aerosol sprays do, Cliff, but it is pollution.
Yeah, I would consider it as a localized affair to serve a particular purpose. you know, with a highly volatile liquid that would not be expected to have any major or enduring impact. That's what I would see as the release of jet fuel.
Do you think anybody will ever really go public and just say, this is what's going on, folks?
Well, we don't have that now, that's for sure. I can only, right now, I can only go by the past. Certainly not, has not happened. You know, there are so many ways of managing and controlling information flow now that actually, if you were to project ahead and imagine, even if a person were to do that, you know, you can have the most significant revelation in the whole world take place these days, and people will pass it by in 10 seconds and go on to the next item on the entertainment network. You know, that's unfortunate, but many people would not even realize the consequence of information when it's provided to them. And with very successful efforts at managing what I would call managing information flow and categorizing people, you can see that with the presidential candidates under debate. You will see very, very systematic manipulation of that information and pigeonholing of potentially, valuable contributions so that they become nullified.
All right. The clock's going to get us soon, Cliff. Let's take as many as we can. You're up with us. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hi. Yeah, Dell, Chicago. George and Nuri, thanks for Coast to Coast, where would we be without you? Cliff Carlson, I remember when you were also talking with a guy named William Thomas. He dropped out. You're still doing it. Congratulations. I have three other offerings to your 7. 8, population control. 9, adapting the planet for an alien or alternative life form habitation. And 10, broadcasting diseases through the wavelengths that they're now using. What's very interesting is the other day I was out with 6 of my friends in an open area. We watched planes going from left to right, from east to west, west to east, and north to south. With the gentleman who called in earlier, if these were military craft, they sure were subjecting the civilian population beneath to all kind of problems. They were driving crazily. I think, again, that this is time when things like this should be talked about. The point is, what are you going to do about it once you understand it? Because now the whole planet is being changed.
It is a population control possibility there, Cliff.
Yes, and you know, in my case, that's a controversial issue. On my case, I just state the fact there, and that is more people are dying, will die with increased population. Whether you want to call it an agenda or not, it is happening that more people will die. Now, to read into the deliberate, culling of the population. I'm not saying yes or no. I will say that more people are dying, will die if you increase the pollution of our environment. In addition, when you have these biological components that are completely unexpected, I mean, bizarre. If you read one paper called Extraordinary Biological Observation, that one just still blows my mind in terms of what actually happened there. People will take a look at that paper. So, you know, the prospect for disease, it's all certainly implicit within the construct that exists here. There's always this line of, you know, what data do you have? Because there's always somebody willing to, have their threshold is reached. And everybody has their own threshold. I simply try to be reasonable and sensible in my presentation. And I am not one to eliminate considerations very easily. And I understand and am aware of those that have just been offered.
Why do you think mainstream networks aren't touching this topic?
Well, let's go back to this Manhattan Project. How is that to be handled? If you have a covert operation, you know, when people ask me questions, they want life simple and they want the 5 W's, the who, what, when, where, why. They want all these very quickly.
Yep.
Okay, they want the snapshot. What I can offer to them in return is another question, and that is, if you could imagine yourself in control of the design of one of the, if not the most sophisticated covert operation on the globe, would you make the 5 W's available to your citizens?
No, but at least, you know, here we are with programs like this and a guest like you. We're talking about it on a network level, nearly 500 stations. It's all over satellite. Why don't they go out at least and try to interview people? Why don't they interview you?
Well, you know, why does the mainstream media manipulate and control information? Because there is an agenda, need, and desire to manage people's state of knowledge.
I mean, I've seen the same thing they're doing just with, let's say, the Republican candidates.
Absolutely.
Where old Ron Paul's getting these poll votes after each debate, and now they're thinking about kicking him off.
Absolutely. It's another shining example, and that's what I was using as an example to refer to. You can have the most charismatic, accomplished, skillful leader that should ever exist in this world, and you will not find them running this country.
Well, Cliff, we're going to run out of time in about a minute or so, but I do want you to get that toll-free number out one more time and your website, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much, George. This documentary is offered at cost. It is not allowed for there to be a profit made with this documentary. The telephone number is 1-800-335-7226. There is a very kind and generous lady by the name of Harriet Fells that is making this available to the public, as well as another a distributed network across the globe, which people can access through the website, which is under my name. My research is under my name, carnicom.com, spelled C-A-R-N-I-C-O-M. And it's basically a collection of my research for 7 to 8 years. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to be here tonight, George, and to give a very thoughtful and fair presentation of information.
Very informed, Cliff. Thanks so much. We'll have you back again.
Thank you, George.
For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbett, Stephanie Smith, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.